You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Fentanyl is a pain medication prescribed after major surgery or during advanced stage cancers. It is up to 50 times more potent than heroin and up to 100 times stronger than morphine. But the illegal production of this synthetic opioid is fueling a rise in overdose deaths across the country, and that includes California. Fentanyl is often unknowingly laced with counterfeit prescription pills like Xanax or Percocet, as well as recreational drugs. Since it's so potent, just a small amount can have deadly consequences. This is why the DEA warns one pill can kill. But although awareness into what is now a full-on epidemic is widespread, solutions to curb this crisis are challenging, especially in the most vulnerable and historically neglected communities. A roundtable at the state capitol listened to tribal communities across the state who are pleading for resources. The most recent complete data from 2020 shows Native American and Indigenous people had the highest opioid-related overdoses in California, and signs indicate that illicit fentanyl use has surged even higher over the past year. So we're going to spend some time understanding why. Starting off our conversation is Kate Wolf, CAP Radio's healthcare reporter. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning, Vicky.
So you have joined us in the past. You've been following how the fentanyl crisis is unfolding across communities in Northern California. Your latest series of reports is focusing on how this epidemic is impacting Native American communities. How did you come to better understand what they're collectively grappling with?
Right. So I'm relatively new to the healthcare beat, but I came from San Francisco, where the fentanyl crisis has been openly playing out on the streets. And as a reporter, I spoke to a lot of people who told me that fentanyl is everywhere. People get into it because they get hooked on prescription opioids, or they're exposed to it in other drugs, as you mentioned, what they think are prescription pills, but are have fentanyl in them. In the efforts of, I really have started to figure out more about how this is affecting Native American communities because of the efforts of Assemblymember James Ramos, who's from the San Bernardino area and was elected in 2018 as the first Native American person to California state legislature. And he's really been trying to highlight Native issues among his colleagues in the legislature. He got there to be funding for outreach to Native communities regarding 988, which is the crisis line, which we're going to talk about later. And he also convened a roundtable regarding fentanyl in tribal communities last week.
It's not that it's new that the statistics in Indian country are surpassing others in the state of California. It's always been that way. And it's always been felt that we've been left on our own to deal with our own problem, right? Now, by having a representation in the state legislature and being able to assert ourselves, representation truly does matter. Now we're forming alliances because now the rest of the world, if you will, is now being exposed to what's truly going on within Indian country.
And those alliances that he's talking about are with other members of the legislature, and they're also with mental health services. And so during the roundtable last week, there was a lot of discussion about what is really going on within Indian country. And a lot of that is that there's an insidious agent of fentanyl and opioid abuse affecting people of all ages.
Yeah, you're talking about a 988 summit as well as a roundtable. So these are two really big recent developments that are taking place in Sacramento. When it comes to that roundtable, which was held at the state capitol, what did you learn?
So there were three elements to the roundtable, which was focused on how the legislature could help Indian country and Native American people living in urban areas. There were friends and family impact statements, law enforcement and education perspectives, and healthcare perspectives. And a lot of the experts who spoke described having direct experience with losing someone to fentanyl. More than half had lost a direct family member. Here's Yurok Tribal Police Chief Greg O'Rourke.
I still had that stigma attached to it of, well, they shouldn't have started using. And it wasn't until my sister died of an overdose when that shift of perspective became very personal and very relevant.
And Chief O'Rourke works with the sheriff out there in Del Norte County to respond to this. They have a positive relationship, which is not always the case between tribal police and local sheriffs. That was one of the issues that was discussed needed to be bolstered to respond both to instances of overdoses, but also to the influx of drugs, of fentanyl and opioids into tribal communities. O'Rourke said that they can do better with educating people about these drugs, educating people about harm reduction, and with getting people into services immediately when they need them. I also learned about what this is looking like among young people on tribal lands, and it's super pressing. One of the speakers was Amy Admire, who's been teaching on the Rincon Indian Reservation in San Diego County. So we were talking about the Yurok tribe up in Northern California.
Far, far northwest corner of the state along the Pacific Ocean, just south of Oregon.
Exactly, exactly. And Amy Admire, who's speaking down from San Diego County, she's been working there for decades. And she says, we know about the school-to-prison pipeline, where students are over-policed, pushed out of school into the juvenile justice system, taught that school isn't really meant for them. But she says that they're seeing an emerging trend, which is the school-to-addiction pipeline, where young people who are Native, who are discriminated against at school, who are under or miseducated or, you know, not thought to be worthy of investment, get involved with drugs.
Opiates such as fentanyl saturate our communities. Our children tell us they are everywhere. And we have eighth graders with opioid problems, exacerbated by the pandemic. We know they're not returning to school.
So Admire, you can hear the emotion in her voice. It's really personal. She's seeing this every day. She's really on the front lines. And she wants to see schools provide more equitable education to Native students and enforce existing California laws that are meant to support them. So Admire came with a list of more specific recommendations that she issued to lawmakers. So this conversation is really just getting started. It's really getting in front of legislators. There's some stuff in the legislature that is like harm reduction elements there. It's a little bit piecemeal, but she's really saying we need more regulation in the schools.
Yeah, I mean, Kate, you mentioned that there's existing legislation, but obviously this roundtable is highlighting that there are gaps in actually making that legislation effective. And there's also talks of more legislation and bills moving through the legislature this session. Given that California is home to the most tribes in the country, what did you learn about these challenges when it comes to responding in the immediacy of an overdose, but also long-term in prevention?
In terms of long-term prevention, I think it connects to what Admire was saying with education of people of all ages, right? Young people up to elders. We know that elders are all, Native communities are also losing elders to the to fentanyl. And mental health support, which I know we'll get into in this conversation, is so necessary. In terms of immediacy, it can be really dire in these rural areas. A lot of the tribes are in very far-flung places. And that there's, of course, a huge historical context for that of being pushed to far-flung lands. Angela Elliott Santos is the chairperson of the Manzanita Band of the Kumeyaay Nation near the state's border with Mexico. And she says, when someone's in danger there, there's only one deputy who responds.
If you call and it's in the night, no one comes for 2 or 3 hours, there are no PERT teams, there are no mental health crisis teams. But maybe through collaboration in those rural areas, we could serve not only our people, but the other people who are also suffering in that area.
And when she says PERT team there, she's talking about psychiatric emergency response teams, which are often desired in crisis situations over police because they can provide de-escalation and appropriate mental health support. And the need for regional solutions were echoed by, a very famous tribal chief who came, Yurok Tribal Court Chief Judge Abby Abenanti, who's the first tribal woman to pass the state bar and become a judge in California.
No, we cannot ignore this. And we need to be in partnerships with our natural partners. And that means law enforcement. It means health services. It means we need mobile clinics in rural areas. We need regional treatment centers, not treatment centers that we have to go hundreds of miles to that may not have room for us. This is not right. This is a state that can do better and needs to do better.
And that was something that many speakers brought up, which was that there's a need for increased, consistent funding for tribes in the state.
We're talking about fentanyl specifically, but tied to this, of course, is a conversation about mental health. Last year, there was the official rollout of 988. That is a suicide and crisis lifeline. It's an easier number, and it was rebranded from the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And there was a summit about this, specifically when it pertains to matters of Native American and Indigenous people. And it was held in Sacramento, specifically to highlight barriers. What did you take away from the conversations there?
So I learned that the 988, since it rebranded, calls have increased. So people who are in crisis, people who are have a family member or friend in crisis are calling about 22%. They're increased 22% in the 6 months following the change to 988 compared to the 6 months before. But D.D. Hirsch Mental Health Services, which is the largest provider of crisis counseling in the state, they said that they know that they need to be doing more to serve Native people. Native American people are the second highest rates of suicide in the state, and they account for about 1% to 2% of California's population. About less than 1% of the calls to 988 were from Native people. And they know that more needs to be done both on their side, on the crisis counseling side, to provide cultural competency, to provide cultural humility, a term that Virginia Hedrick taught me, who's going to join us later. To help people in their crisis, that people who know about their backgrounds, who know about their belief systems, who can really guide them in a way that's sensitive. And then on the tribal side, there needs to be more done to lower stigma and ensure that people feel comfortable calling and people feel like they can actually be helped there. So it was a really powerful convening and really brought home how integrated traditional cultural elements are in mental health and in healing. And the summit started off with a really beautiful traditional song led by Elder Mary Tarongo and Raquel Williams from Wilton Rancheria. And they described that the song is meant to invoke Moloku, the eagle, who brings you down into the valley, but also up onto the mountaintops.
Hey, yo, we know. Hey, yo, we know. Hey, yo, we know. And it's so. Walk like a child.
And you're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're learning how the fentanyl crisis is impacting Native American communities across California. We're now going to bring in an important perspective. Virginia Hedrick is a member of the Yurok tribe and the executive director of the California Consortium for Urban Indian Health, which does advocacy on behalf of health clinics and treatment facilities in the state. Thank you for making the time, Virginia.
Squeanakoy, Naknow, Virginia Hedrick, Shregon, Mewamecha. Good morning. My name's Virginia. I come from the village of Shregon. It's good to be here.
Thank you for taking the time. We were just talking about a roundtable that was held at the state capitol, as well as a summit highlighting the barriers to the 988 crisis lifeline. I mean, both of these conversations are really focused on improving resources and access to Native American communities across the state. And we just heard candid emotional responses that are profound and I'm sure quite familiar to you as well. What are you seeing on the front lines that people need to better understand?
Yeah, I think, there's a lot to that. You know, something that I said in both places, and I can summarize better here, is as Indian people, we every day walk in two worlds. One world, which is this very Western sort of colonized world. And then the other world is our traditional realm, our cultural realm. And so when we think about solutions and we think about how to address these issues, we have to have a solution and a response that comes from both places. And so in terms of 988, you know, 988 can be a really critical resource for communities like the Native American community, like my community, like other Black and Brown communities who have historically not been able to rely on emergency services like 911. 988, you know, I have a lot of hope for it that if properly built, if properly supported, and with this realm of being able to answer and respond to calls with a sense of cultural humility and a sense of cultural competency, you know, can be a really a positive piece. In terms of the fentanyl and the opioid crisis, this is something, you know, substance use disorder has been impacting our communities for far too long. And we've been working to address it with extremely limited funding and a very underfunded system. The Indian healthcare delivery system here in California is grossly underfunded, both on the urban side and on the tribal side. The state of California went 12 years with no funding to the state Indian health program. It was only restored by a push by Assemblymember James Ramos to reinstate the state Indian health program, which is the first consistent funding to go back out to Indian health programs. And it was only refunded for a 3-year period. So we're coming into this crisis into a very underfunded system and a system that doesn't well account for offering traditional healing services or cultural services. We're really fortunate that the state of California included in its larger Cal AIM initiative the ability for Indian health programs to bill for traditional healing services through substance use disorder. But that portion wasn't approved by our federal partners at CMS. So we're still waiting for what, you know, as Indian country, we have a lot of the solutions. We just need the right support. We need the right funding, and we need agencies, government and federal agencies, to really come in and trust that we know what we're doing.
How much of a game changer was it to have Assemblymember Ramos in the state legislature, who is the first Native American to be a state lawmaker in California history?
Yeah, I mean, I think the really critical thing about having Assemblymember Ramos is he's the first California Native American. So he's the first person from a member of a California tribe who has that perspective of what we've experienced in terms of historical trauma, ongoing trauma. So we often hear talking about historical trauma like, oh, well, this was something that happened only 150 years ago. But it's really important to know that there's been ongoing trauma perpetrated by state, county, and federal governments in a number of ways. We see it right now with the MMIW crisis, which is so uniquely tied to the opioid crisis, to the fentanyl crisis, and to the shortage of proper health services. So having Assemblymember Ramos in place has given all of Indian country access to a state lawmaking process that we've never had before.
Yeah. When you bring up the missing and murdered Indigenous people crisis, and you say that it is tied obviously to overdoses and drug addiction as well, mental health more broadly, there are jurisdictional challenges. You have tribal land, you have county sheriff, you have federal law enforcement, and these create really dire gaps that cost lives at the end of the day when it comes to Native and Indigenous people. When it comes to the fact that we're home to the most tribes in the country, we're talking about land that can be very remote in Del Norte County. We're also talking about Wilton Rancheria, which is located in the Sacramento area. How does the location of tribes shape the response or lack thereof?
Yeah, I mean, I think location has a deep impact, but it's also the general invisibility of American Indian people in the state of California. You know, the highest population of American Indian Alaska Natives in the state of California live in an urban environment. And recent studies have shown that we experience the highest rates of racial misclassification. So in terms of healthcare, which is really my purview, you know, when we go to a hospital, we can be racially misclassified up to 60% of the time. And that happens if we phenotypically appear white or black, or if we come with a Hispanic surname, probably tied to a genocide of the mission system here in California. If any of those things are present, we're going to be classified as a race other than American Indian, even if it's not our primary identifying race. And so, you know, I'm always deeply concerned when we know that the current data shows that we're dying at rates 6 times that of our non-Hispanic white counterparts when it comes to opioids, and we haven't factored in that we are racially misclassified on our death certificates. So the disparity is even deeper than we see it, but we absolutely are feeling it in Indian country. I mean, Kate said it perfectly earlier, you know, more than half of the people in the roundtable had somebody, myself included, who have lost somebody to fentanyl, who know somebody in the hospital to fentanyl. That's more rare. And I shared that, you know, and this is true for other communities of color. we don't call 911, so uniquely tied to 988. So when we have somebody experiencing an overdose, we don't call for support because we don't know who's going to show up and we don't know if anyone will even come. And to the chairwoman's point, it might be 2 or 3 hours later. So what's the point? So when you look at opioid related deaths for American Indians, we top the chart. We're on the bottom when it comes to hospitalizations and ER visits. We don't get help. We just die.
When you bring up 988, that is a new addition in terms of the rebranding and making it easier for people to remember the number, literally. But there are obviously these unique cultural barriers that make access very difficult when it comes to people who live on tribal land or who are Native American and Indigenous. Is there a state, because 988 is national, so is there a state elsewhere in the country that is more of a gold standard in addressing cultural barriers? Especially when it comes to tribal lands?
Yeah, Washington State has a line called Natives Helping Natives. And when you call 988 with a Washington State area code, you can press 4 to reach their line. In the state of California, I think we're inching our way close. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that at Tsukuli, we host the CalHope Red Line, which we're a Native-run organization, offering a crisis line Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, for folks in our community who are experiencing distress. It was launched primarily related to COVID-19, but we're getting calls of all ages, with a special emphasis on our elder population, who have felt really isolated and really just need somebody to talk to. And we're able, through our red line, to transfer calls or get them access to services if needed. It's not a 988 response. It's not funded at that level, and it's not by design. I also wanted to address something you said earlier about the complexity of jurisdiction in Indian country. That's not by mistake. It's by design. Indian country was absolutely designed to be left out of government-funded services. And so as we re-navigate these waters, we can't enter them as though that there was a mistake or it all just fell together this way. This is absolutely by colonial design.
Are there specific pieces of policy that are making its way through the state capitol that give you some optimism or some level of assuredness that it's going to improve and things will change?
Yeah, I mean, Assemblymember James Ramos is championing some really important bills, including one that would allow tribal officers the access to the CLET system so they could properly look up potentially dangerous people on tribal lands and have a better understanding of what they've been involved in the past. There's a current request from California tribes to fund a $200 million initiative to address MMIP. And then we continue to push for harm reduction efforts. We know that when folks feel supported, no matter where they're at in their substance use disorder journey, their likelihood of staying alive and knowing that their life is valued goes far up. And I can think of countless examples of people who simply by not using alone, simply by having Narcan ready. And we have really dangerous other drugs. And panelists mentioned that too, that, you know, there's other drugs that are coming in that are not going to respond well to Narcan, if at all. So we continue to enter really dangerous waters.
Mm-hmm. On an individual level, you know, mental health has long had a stigma, right? Reaching out for help. This is across the country. It goes back generations and decades. Is that changing within Native American communities, reaching out, asking for help?
Yeah, I think it's a slow course of change, but there's many, many of us who have been really working to destigmatize access to mental health, destigmatize drug use, and really have real conversations about root causes, historical trauma. And so I do think it's slowly changing. I'm a mother of 5 kids, and I see it in my own kids, that their beliefs, the way they talk about accessing mental health, the way that they share that they need help is incredible. It's incredible. And I know the difference between me and my parents. So I think we're getting there. We're in an era of healing, but we can't let up now. We have to keep pushing.
Virginia, thank you so much for the time.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Virginia Hedrick is a member of the Yurok tribe and the executive director of the California Consortium for Urban Indian Health, which does advocacy on behalf of health clinics and treatment facilities in the state. Kate, thank you for joining us as well.
Yes, happy to be here. Thanks.
And Kate Wolf, of course, is CAP Radio's healthcare reporter, and we're discussing how the fentanyl crisis and overall mental health is impacting Native American communities across California, as well as some promising solutions that are taking shape at the state capitol. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.